Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody is having a good start to your day. Man, it's going to be maybe pushing 80 degrees today, so... And if you get a chance, get out and enjoy the weather. I thought it was nice yesterday. It's going to be even nicer today. We've got a great show in store for you. We are excited about it. A little bit later in the program, in the final hour, Joel Ward, who announced yesterday his retirement. He's been out of the league for a bit, but he officially made it known on the Players Tribune. So we'll get into former Predator Joel Ward and the announcement that he is going to hang up the skates for good as he approaches 40 years of age. Also, Isaiah Wilson, who was the first-round pick. You heard us talk to John Robinson, the general manager, yesterday. Today, we will talk to his first-round pick, the big tackle from Georgia, Isaiah Wilson, at 11 o'clock. Darren McFarland here on the south side of town in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick holding fort in or holding court, either one. He is holding things down in East Nashville. Chase McCabe on the west side in Bellevue. And Marquise Munson back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gentlemen, how you doing?
I got the fort and the court secured over here on the east side.
You got everything hanging. You got the moat. Do you have a moat in East Nashville?
No, the Cumberland River is close, you know, so that it kind of curves around the eastern part of the city. You know, it kind of makes its way, meanders around there. So it's about half a moat.
You probably, and I don't mean to make light of this, and I'm certainly not making a joke because it wasn't a joking matter, but probably 10 years ago to this Thursday, you may have had a moat in East Nashville. Do you know that reference?
Yeah.
Do you realize that's when it started? Thursday will be the first day that it started.
Wow.
10 years ago, a decade. Can you believe that?
We didn't have a moat, but my house, we did have a pool in our basement. We could have gone swimming. Like, you could have, honestly could have, like, swam from one end of the basement to the other.
Wow. That's no good. That's definitely what you don't want to see in the house.
We had to make some adjustments.
Yes. Yes, you did. For sure. So, yeah, that's hard to believe that 10 years ago, this Thursday, would be the first day that all that started and the historic flood that crippled our city and Middle Tennessee. And, boy, the scenes and the shots, and certainly we'll talk about it later in the week. And it's just something you'll never, ever forget. And then as we experienced with the tornadoes at the start of March, the city rallied and came together, and sports athletes in this town rallied and came together and helped out. And, you know, we built everything back up just like we always do and we'll continue to do. So just wanted to bring like that. I saw that over the weekend. I was like, wow, this Thursday will be a decade since that flood hit our city. I must say this, because yesterday we got right into the draft talk right out of the gates. Little update. I did complete Ozark. Wow, what a final episode. Man, got to be honest, I'm not saying anything. I'm not going to give anything away, but, man, did they go out with a bang. That was I'll just leave it at that.
So
what a finale. What a finale. Yes. Was I ever.
So what's next?
I think there's going to be a four. I think it's set up for a four. I've heard Jason Bateman. He doesn't admit to anything, but he certainly doesn't shy away from it. Nobody has squashed there's not going to be a season four.
Hmm. Well, there's certainly plenty of unresolved things.
Mm-hmm. They have left the door open for a season four. How about that?
No doubt.
And I think it's going to happen, but I thought the finale, I told you episode 9 was a little disappointing to me. 10 was not. Did you enjoy 10 as much as me?
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
So we've been talking to a lot of people of what's next. And we've kind of got a group in Atlanta that we Zoom call with on Friday. So we're kind of doing this together. We've been watching these shows together, and we talk about it. And so we decided before, and then I threw out some of the things that we've talked about on this show, whether it's your suggestion, Willie, or suggestion of Craig Smith or other people that we've talked to. We've decided to go with Waco, and I'm halfway through that just because it's six episodes.
That looks really good.
It, you know, it, I remember it. You don't, Chase, but, you know, I lived through that. Willie did too, yeah. But I didn't obviously at that time in my life. You know, that's, what is that? That's college or just out of college. You know, that's,
yeah.
You know, I.
So that's what it's about. I haven't read up on that one.
I had a lot going on, and so I really didn't pay close attention. I certainly remember it all, but I didn't know the fine details, so. You know, I am. It was highly ranked in Netflix. I think it was in their top five right now. You know how they do the rankings. I think it was fourth overall. And so, since it was six episodes, we agreed just to knock it out this week. Like I said, we're halfway through it. I'll be done by the end of the week, and then I think I've already.
Are you saying thumbs up though?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. All of that, Willie, I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday I was talking to. I don't understand the whole cult thing. I don't understand how people get wrapped up into that, you know. I've watched the stuff on Manson, you know. I've watched the stuff. Now I'm watching this, and I don't know how people buy into to their message. It sounds, when you're watching it, so ridiculous and so incredibly off. Like, you know, where was that sensor in your head to go, you know, I don't think this is the way we should be doing things. I don't think we should do this. And I don't understand how you convince people to go along with it. I don't get that. But nonetheless, it is kind of fascinating to watch and see some of these events that happened. You know, they were factual events, and just to learn a little bit more about them. So yeah, I would give it a thumbs up, definitely. I mean, like I said, you can rifle through it pretty quick. My choice of words in this first segment.
Is it a documentary or is it a docudrama? Is it a actors?
It's a drama.
It's
like actors, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
But based on the history.
You know who's in it? I started laughing. Ruth. I don't know her name, her real name.
Ruth is in it.
Yeah, okay. She is in it. She has a prominent part in it. She is absolutely in it. Yes.
Same accent?
No, you should say she's got longer hair. It's probably a wig, I guess. I don't know. But, no, she looks different. She's nice. She's very nice. This completely different role.
Okay.
So you'll have to watch that. Check out Waco. And also, I don't know.
I'll put it on the list.
I think we've talked about it, but I don't think either one of you said you've watched or have, you know, been watching Billions. I love that show. The lawyer for Axelrod is also in Waco. He plays an FBI, like a head guy in the FBI. But I don't think you guys are in on Billions.
No, I haven't watched that. You know what I did watch last
have
night,
not.
Though? And this should not shock either one of you, but... Greg Maddux, 9 innings pitched, 2 runs on 2 hits. Braves take a 1-0 lead in the 95 World Series over your Indians.
I was at the game.
Glad you got that in.
Fox Sports South is showing it this week, so checking that out.
That's awesome. Well, thanks.
You're welcome.
I was at the game with a colleague of ours. We left Columbia, South Carolina after Vanderbilt got thrashed by the Gamecocks and bolted right to Atlanta Stadium and got there in like the second inning and watched that game and then came back the next night for game 2. So I have great memories. That was the first World Series game I ever got to go to.
Really?
That's cool. At the old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium?
Yes.
I guess they were building Turner Field, or what was going to be Olympic Stadium at the time, but they played, I think, 2 more years at Fulton County before moving to Turner Field.
Yeah, they played the next year, the Yankees, in the World Series, also in Fulton County. The 96 Olympics, of course, they had the Olympic baseball at Fulton County. They had the track and field at the new Turner Stadium, whatever they called it, the Olympic Stadium. And then I think 97, they had converted it to the baseball park.
Yep. I actually have,
if I remember correctly,
I actually have the program from the first game at Turner Field.
Yeah, because 98 was the All-Star game, right?
Yes.
Wasn't that the Pete Rose, Jim Gray?
2000 was the All-Star game.
Or 2000, yeah.
Oh, that wasn't until 2000. Okay. I thought it was 98.
That was 2000.
Okay.
I just happened to catch a clip of that. They played a clip of that on a Twitter. I just happened to catch on the scroll some clips of that All-Star game.
Hmm.
But yeah, look, I know it hurts for you, Darren, but I was a young kid, and so this is good for me and the history of my Braves to go watch their one World Series win. So,
what was the format on – what was the format? So games one and two were in Atlanta, three and four were in Cleveland.
3, 4, 5.
Yeah, 3, 4, 5. Okay, that's what I thought because I thought I went to three games, and I was sitting there trying to play it out in my head. So I went to games 3, 4, and 5, and then watched game
six.
It was a
pretty good series. Yeah, of course, the game six was the Tom Glavine one hitter combined with Mark Wohlers to close it out. But yeah, that's a great series to watch if you want to watch masterful pitching. Maddux and Glavine. Maddux was fantastic. I guess Sports South is showing the entire series, Chase, I take
it? Yeah, it's World Series week, and Ryan was telling me this morning that in Cincinnati they're showing the 90 World Series when the Reds last
I was going to say, they have to then go back a ways to get some Reds.
Sweet Lou, Lou Piniella.
World Series footage, yeah. I was also attempting to be there for that World Series game one, and I couldn't get in. Didn't have enough money.
Oh, wow.
About $200 as a college kid. That was a lot of dough back then, man. I scraped everything I had. Me and my roommate had $200 each for a ticket. Couldn't get in.
Hmm.
Think about that. In 1990.
Wow. That's a lot.
We waited till the third inning before, or at least it was maybe bottom of the second. We still were trying to, even after the game started, we're like, we'll just wait then. We still didn't get in.
Wow.
I know.
That's a bummer.
I know. We had to go across the street and watch it at Caddy's.
So also, with the celebratory games going on right now, the Fox Sports Tennessee starts tonight the run to the 2017 Cup, the telecast, even beyond the ones that we were able to cover on Fox Sports Tennessee. So tonight is our broadcast, game one in Chicago, the first of back-to-back shutouts by Pecorine, the 1-0 goaltender standing on the head maneuver to get it started. And then once it goes into the second, third, fourth round, even it will be shown on Fox Sports Tennessee, but it'll be the NBC Sports coverage of the game. We'll have some special features on it. So I know a lot of people were clamoring, as we've shown some of the flashbacks from this season. They wanted to see those games, so that's what we're going to show.
All right, we will come back. Jay Mariotti, we've been talking about The Last Dance on the show. He was certainly right in the thick of things in Chicago during that incredible dynasty run by the Bulls. We'll talk with Jay on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've enjoyed the last two Monday shows talking about episodes 1 and 2, the first ones that were done a couple of weeks ago, episodes 3 and 4 this past Sunday here on the show. The Last Dance on ESPN, a guy that was in Chicago for a long time covering all things Chicago, including the Bulls. The host of Unmuted Podcast, Jay Mariotti, is on the line with us. Jay, how you doing? Good morning.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me, and I hope everybody is staying safe today.
Yes, we are certainly trying to do our part here in Nashville. I would love to get your thoughts because you certainly had a much closer view. We were much farther away. That you were right in the middle of that. What have you thought through four episodes?
Well, the magnitude and the scope of this remain immense. I mean, it's hard to wrap my head around it, and this is 22 years old. But, guys, I'm happy that millennials, younger people, are finally seeing what I got to live for 8 years, because I've heard nothing in the last few years other than LeBron has eclipsed Michael Jordan. And it kind of pains me to hear that, because I don't think people who just make that blanket statement realize – some of the obstacles that Jordan went through. And now you're starting to see it. He had a general manager who was sabotaging him. He had an owner who did not want to pay him, Pippen, Phil Jackson, and you had this dysfunction. So many dynasties in sports, the Lakers going back to Showtime with Jerry Buss as the owner, and I could name you five or six. The owner and the GM would sit back and enjoy it, and people would get along, and they would be rewarded financially, not the Bulls. And this was the dysfunction that ended up killing this thing before its time. And I think the director, Jason Herrera, has done a wonderful job here of presenting that. We're only four episodes in, and I think people now realize it wasn't just Michael, but these very diverse and rich characters, Pippen, Dennis, Phil Jackson. It's almost miraculous when you think about these personalities that they were able to win a three-peat originally and then reboot it with Dennis Rodman and win another one. Watching this right now, I'm still blown away by it.
Yeah. Something we've talked the last couple of weeks about, just because we've also been covering this for a long time and understand the dynamic of, you know, front offices to athletes and agents and everything. We've been talking, can you imagine today if there were – I've been blown away at just – yes, Jerry Krause deserves a ton of this. I get it. But I just have never seen athletes, you know, treat someone – a general manager, president and a general manager – the way that they did behind the scenes. I just – it's amazing to me to watch how they talked to the guy who signs their paychecks.
Well, technically, the guy who signed...
Well, I guess that's the owner, yeah.
But I know what you're getting at. And my question, and I've done several interviews the last couple of weeks, where the hell was Jerry Reinsdorf in all of this?
Yeah.
Both ways, by the way. If Phil Jackson and his agent ran across a belligerent Krause every summer when it came time for a new contract, well, then Reinsdorf has to step in and say, you know, we've got a great thing here, Jerry. We're going to give Phil his contract. Nope, Reinsdorf stood in the background. Same goes other way around. Reinsdorf had to know, because we all knew that this mocking of Jerry Krause was going on, that they completely made fun of him, not only Michael and Scotty, but it spread down to other players on the team. Krause was mocked. He was a short man. He was overweight. He was easy to mock, but you're absolutely right here. How was this allowed to happen? I don't know how many times I wrote columns saying, where is Reinsdorf? Oh, he would show up with his cigar when they won a championship. You'd see him right there with Bob Costas every time. But he allowed this to happen. He enabled the dysfunction. And you see this often with his other team, the Chicago White Sox. So not enough so far has been devoted to Reinsdorf in this. And, you know, we do have six more episodes. Let's see where it goes. But that's the point I hit on every time, what you just said. It's shocking this was allowed to happen, and it certainly would not happen today.
Obviously, Jerry Krause is not here to defend himself or to speak on this. So you were around him. What? Why do you think he just could? It wasn't enough just to be a dynasty. It wasn't just enough to win championships. Why was he always looking for more of the attention? I guess for us outsiders, it's hard to understand why he just couldn't go along and be. He was getting praise for certain draft picks and certain moves. Why was that not enough? You knew him better than us, obviously.
Well, he was a private guy and he had his people. I remember a prominent Boston writer who I did TV with told me, I'm a Jerry guy. And I said, what does that mean exactly? He said, I go way back with Jerry. I said, what are you trying to tell me? And he said, well, he doesn't like you. I said, well, I don't really care if he likes me or not. A lot of people don't like me, and a lot of people don't like him. It's my job. It's his job. Krause had these little networks of people, and it was almost a double secret probation kind of thing. It was just creepy. And you're right. We have to remind everybody that Jerry passed three years ago, and it's a shame he didn't have an opportunity to speak his mind in this documentary. I mean, he wasn't a bad guy. He was just a secret guy who would operate behind the scenes. He thought he knew more than everybody else knew. Tim Floyd comes out last week on a station in Louisiana and says, Jerry Krause had been recruiting me since 1988 for this job. These guys had daily dialogue throughout the dynasty. Tim Floyd and Jerry Krause. Krause thought he was the smartest guy in the world, and I'm going to bring in Tim Floyd at some point, and he's going to continue what we've already built. It was never enough for him. He found Phil Jackson in the minor leagues of basketball coaching in Albany, New York. Jerry Krause felt that Phil Jackson through the years did not appreciate what Jerry did for him. I'm sure that Phil Jackson thanked him countless times, but I think Jerry Krause wanted that voiced publicly. Instead, Phil had to deal with Michael being underpaid, Scotty being underpaid, and he took their side because, face it, he's the coach. He needs to win championships, and it became this ridiculous rebellion. These three guys over here, these two guys over here, and it's shocking to me they were able to win championships through all of this. And, again, that's where the director so far has done his best work in showing this gulf between ownership and these Hall of Famers.
We're talking to Jay Mariotti, who is longtime columnist in Chicago during this run. You've seen him on ESPN as a television commentator for many years. And, Jay, take me back to the time where the Bulls were trying to build to the point where they could beat the Pistons. I thought that was a fascinating part of it because thinking back to it, I really admired that they really had to earn it. In retrospect, it seems easy. Yeah, it was inevitable with Michael Jordan. They were going to start to win. They would win a championship eventually. But there was a long time where you wondered if they had that rap, can't win the big one kind of thing. Take me back to when you were covering it. Do you think it was inevitable, or did you have your doubts that they could ever climb the full mountain?
Well, the question at the time was the Bad Boys. Were they going to thug themselves out of a dynasty? And I think that kind of happened. They got old in Detroit, but they won a couple. And it really came down to whether Michael Jordan, and this is where Krause did a great job, and always should be respected for this, Krause made the controversial call that we've got to get Doug Collins out of here because it's just too Michael Jordan-centric, and we need to bring in a coach who can develop Scotty, maximize this entire roster, Horace Grant, and turn it into a team production. Krause was correct. He stepped out. He got rid of Collins. Michael didn't like it. You're seeing that in the docuseries, but it worked. And it was bizarre to see Phil Jackson conducting yoga sessions and giving books to the players and some of them just throwing the books out, but it worked. And that's where Krause has to be commended to this day, but so does Phil Jackson. Everybody says, oh, it's easy to inherit Michael Jordan. No, they were stumbling. They were losing to the Pistons. They also needed to toughen up. While the Pistons, Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn and these guys were literally waging combat sports in the postseason. The Bulls, you saw in the videos, they were kind of wiry. They were athletic. They needed to bulk up themselves and stand down to these guys. And they finally did. They got to it in the weight room. You saw a bigger Jordan. He wasn't pushed around so easily by the Jordan rules. And ultimately, the Pistons self-destructed in that sweep. And what's amazing to me, guys, is in the last 48 hours, this crossfire continues between Isaiah and Michael and Horace Grant and Laimbeer. They're just firing back and forth. What, we're 30 years later, these guys are still fighting. We should bring them onto some sort of a Skype thing right now and let them go to war on Skype. We'll all watch it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we would, no question. Jay Mariotti with us. And so, Jay, how did you cover the Jordan rules when it was going on? Did you think the Bulls were being treated unfairly, or was it so natural for the Pistons to play that way that it wasn't a big deal? How did you cover that dynamic? Because they really get into that in the documentary.
Yeah, I thought the Pistons were too dirty. And I think a lot of basketball purists would say, nah, that's the way the game should be played. No, I thought the Pistons were thugs. And the funny thing was I started my career way back in Detroit. So I become an enemy in Detroit while I'm working in Chicago. Of course, Isaiah Thomas, who grew up in Chicago, became an enemy in Chicago. That's one of the reasons why Isaiah to this day, by the way, is still hurt, because when he goes back to his hometown, he is truly a pariah. How did I cover it? You let that story come to you. There has been nothing like it. It wasn't just covering the global celebrity of Michael Jordan and following him around the world, but the layers that kept coming at you. The management wouldn't pay Scotty. Management wouldn't pay Phil. And then here comes Dennis Rodman in the party. It's coming at you from all directions. You're loving it because you know you will never, ever cover anything like this again, and that's been true. That said, this should have been portrayed as a joyful, exhilarating experience from top to bottom. It was anything but. It was fraught with peril with Dennis. You never knew when Dennis was going to split and show up drunk at practice. And yet somehow they all made it work, because Scotty and Michael understood, if we don't have Dennis Rodman rebounding, playing defense, we're not going to win a championship. So they put up with a lot. You saw him. They let him go to load management and with Carmen Electra for 4 nights. The whole thing, looking back at this, Dennis shows up in a feather boa. He gets married one Saturday in downtown Chicago. It was not just covering a sports dynasty. This was the ultimate in pop culture in the 90s. It brought in Madonna for a period of time. My head is still spinning from it. I loved every minute of it, but I got to tell you, it did not have to end the way it did. I think they had at least one or two titles left in them, and for that you can blame the owner and the general manager, because they thought, well, we're going to start our own dynasty, and guys, you've seen how that has gone in Chicago. They're barely they're not even a respectable franchise right now. They are a lower-rung NBA franchise, really nondescript and going nowhere.
Jay, we've enjoyed getting to know Will Perdue over the years, his Vanderbilt ties, of course. There's some great perspective by some secondary characters throughout this. At the time, did you have a guy or two? Who were the most interesting people to talk to who were not in the limelight, that were watching this whole thing, a part of the whole thing, but not in the spotlight?
Well, it's funny. Will Perdue, who is now a commentator, Bill Wennington, who is now a commentator, and Steve Kerr, who became a commentator, now a championship coach of the Warriors. These guys, and there were others, because of Michael Jordan and being there, if those three guys had been on another franchise somewhere, the Atlanta Hawks, I don't know if we ever would have seen them get into this second life as broadcasters. They were all personable people, and sure, you have the national media pouring in for a playoff series, and you have a media session, and there are 200 people around Jordan, there are 50 around Pippen, and 70 around Phil. Of course, an intrepid reporter is going to go over to a Will Perdue or a Bill Wennington or a Steve Kerr, and you found out that they had a lot to say. I used to do this little thing, the Jordan tax. Who has benefited the most from being in the presence of Michael Jordan? And I figured this out one day, and I would say Reinsdorf would be right up there, obviously, the way the value of his franchises has just multiplied through the years. But I would say Steve Kerr, of everybody. Steve Kerr shows up in Chicago. He had been cut, I believe, by the Orlando Magic, brought in to replace John Paxson as a spot-up shooter. And you've seen since then how Steve Kerr has become a Hall of Famer, not because of anything he did on the court, but off the court. He was a brilliant broadcaster for TNT, and now he's a three-time championship coach with the Warriors, who probably someday will coach the U.S. Olympic team. So I'm glad you brought that up, because there were these characters on the side of this that ended up sprouting because they were part of the Jordan story.
Jay Mariotti is with us talking The Last Dance, and they've shown at times the gambling side of Michael Jordan. We've seen it on the plane, a couple of clips of that. But during the time, and it's not as taboo anymore to talk about, but how well was it known in media circles of, you know, his gambling and everything that he was a part of? Was that something that was discussed back then, or how much did it really come up?
Well, it came up a lot in 93. 93 was a season that remains hazy. In that period of time, Michael was getting tired of the spotlight, but he was also gambling, and he almost defiantly so. And he didn't try to hide it. During a playoff series in New York, he ran down to Atlantic City, and Dave Anderson of the New York Times wrote about it, and all of a sudden, we're coming off the heels of the Pete Rose gambling scandal, and my God, Michael Jordan, there are similarities in their competitiveness. Rose, who I covered at one point, and Jordan, I could see the similarities. Michael had to be part of the action. It was a competitive thirst that I think went way beyond that. I think he had a gambling problem. And I wasn't alone. And a book is written by some scumbag named Richard Esquinas, who wrote an entire book about taking Michael's money on the golf course. And Michael did not deny it. In North Carolina, a bail bondsman was found dead one day with three of Jordan's checks in his briefcase. This is all going on in 92 and 93 when Jordan mania is starting to take off around the world. Oh, yeah, I wanted to write it because it's a story. Yet I had publishers and editors who were in business bed with Jordan, the Bulls. I mean, just think about it, Chicago at the time. So it was difficult for any journalist to actually try to probe this. Well, you saw what happened ultimately. The NBA decides to investigate. After their third title, Jordan, furious about the NBA investigation, I go out to see him one day at a golf club. He's whipping ice cubes at me. He doesn't want to talk about it. And then his father is murdered. And then shortly after that, Michael shows up at Comiskey Park throwing out a first pitch, and he's announcing he's going to play baseball. I will never tell anybody to connect the dots. That is not fair. That's not responsible. But if you take those events in a sequence, to this day I'm wondering, did the NBA truly investigate Michael Jordan the way baseball investigated Pete Rose? Answer, no way. I'm not saying that David Stern didn't look into it, but at that time, how the NBA was booming, Jordan was the golden goose. Do we really think any commissioner would want to run him out of the sport? No. So those are the unanswered questions. So far in this docuseries, we have seen four terrific episodes. Jason Ehrer has said, I have asked Michael about the gambling. I have asked Michael about his father's murder. Look, guys, Michael was the executive producer of this. He approved the project, and he's approving all the editorial content. So my guess is no, we're not going to have any revelations here. But you asked me the question, yes, I think to this day we're wondering, that was one hellish year in 1993. What happened?
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of alluded to this earlier in the interview, but if history changed, what does it look like if Phil does stay and Jerry Krause doesn't run him off? Do we think we're talking about the Lakers with five championships, or does it go to the Bulls maybe making this dynasty even greater than it already was?
Oh, I think it would have been greater. I think if you had had another owner and another general manager and Michael Jordan was there, somehow Michael Jordan would have had a dynasty. Krause did good work finding Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant and daring to bring in Dennis Rodman. But it may have taken different turns with, say, Jerry West had been running the Bulls. You don't think they would have won six championships? Jerry West would have done it a different way. And if Jerry Buss had been the owner, yes, they would have loved life, paid everybody. They would have opened up their own little forum club in Chicago so everybody could party. And it would be a beautiful thing. And I think it might have been uninterrupted. I'm not so sure Jordan goes to play baseball. I'm not so sure. In fact, I know it wouldn't have been wrecking balled after the sixth title. They would have kept going on and on. What dynasty do you know of that doesn't try to exhaust it? The Pistons tried. We've seen several others through time. You run it through until it runs its course. Who decides, we're ending it here and we're going to start a new one? It's a recipe for disaster because the Bulls have never even gotten started on a new dynasty. So, to answer your question, I believe that it would have taken different and even better turns if you had not had these two guys running the franchise.
Okay, Jay, let's end with this. Let's go on the flip side. We had this discussion yesterday, hot and heavy, on the show. What would the Bulls have looked like if they just would have remained the same? What if Doug Collins would have remained the coach? How do you think it would have played out if Doug Collins would have remained the coach through all of this?
I think it would have been a one-man show. I think Scottie Pippen would not have developed, and I'm not so sure.
Do they break through?
Michael Jordan may have willed a championship at some point, but I think it would have devolved into frustration. Now, I could have named you several other coaches at the time who would have won a championship, but Doug was really young in his career. I think a good question would be, if you had taken Doug Collins 15 years later, the mature Doug Collins, who ended up becoming a great broadcaster himself, who ended up coaching in the NBA, if you had taken a more mature Doug, would they have maybe won? Yeah, I think that's a good question. But at the time, Collins was not prepared to do anything but give Michael Jordan the ball and get out of the way. That's not a recipe for winning a championship. And maybe it would have been an Allen Iverson deal. But I could name you 10 situations in NBA history with one dominant superstar who can't win a championship. That's, I think, what it was in danger of becoming had they not found a team-focused coach such as Phil.
Wow, well said and good stuff. Jay, really appreciate it. Check out his podcast, Unmuted. Have you been enjoying doing that?
Yeah, it's a blast. You don't have people telling you what to say. I hope you guys have terrific bosses who let you fly and do what you want. But sometimes in this business, you want to say things and bosses don't want you to because of advertisers or whatever. The podcast is beautiful because I produce it. It's a lot like Michael Jordan. You know, he can present whatever he wants in this documentary. Well, I can present anything I can in this podcast. So
All right. It's
cool. I enjoy it. And the problem is there's about a million of them right now, and it's hard to differentiate. But it's cool. I like it.
Well, hey, appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Take care.
All right, that is Jay Mariotti, host of Unmuted Podcast. A lot to digest right there. He was a longtime columnist in Chicago, and you can understand why his podcast is called Unmuted. If you're familiar with Jay's work, he worked at ESPN for a long time as well. So we'll get into all that on the other side to wrap up hour number one. Don't forget Isaiah Wilson, the first round pick by the Titans to kick off hour number two, the big tackle from Georgia. More of Darren, Donnick, and Chase next. Well, there's a little dose of coffee right there coming out of the break, getting ready for a good Tuesday. Jay Mariotti, boy, Unmuted.
That
makes sense. That was good. Really good stuff there. Talking about The Last Dance, of course, through four episodes on ESPN, 5 and 6 will be this Sunday evening in case you've missed them. I don't know where you've been, how you've been busy, but 8 o'clock starting on Sunday nights. We're really, really good. And I knew Jay Mariotti would not hold back, and he didn't.
Yeah, he was one of my favorites on Around the Horn. I always liked him and Woody Page would go back and forth with each other.
Oh, they used to have some battles over the years.
Oh, yeah, and they were great. That's when that show, I mean, and I know it's still on and still, you know, people still watch it, but that's when I felt like it was really at its peak.
Do you remember what Woody used to call Jay?
No.
When he got really mad at him?
Yeah, what did he call him?
Richard.
Yeah, that's right. No. I do. I mean, it was good back in those days. So, but yeah, you can tell that Unmuted is the perfect name for his podcast because he doesn't hold back, and he brought up a lot of interesting things. You know, for me, to hear somebody that loved those teams, and especially as I said when this started, I remember the second three-peat. I don't remember the first three-peat, but. Just the ins and outs of that team and watching the documentary the other day and how they treated Dennis Rodman and allowed him to do some of the things that they allowed him to do, but they knew they could get everything out of him. That was like, really? Like, you're just going to let him go to Vegas for a few days?
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting to hear Jay's, you know, Jay's thoughts on that because he lived it.
Well,
that's one of the funniest parts of that whole thing. Michael Jordan saying, Phil, there's no way he's coming back in 48 hours. You're not going to see this guy.
Yeah.
And he Phil right. still said, hey, we got to just let him go.
Yeah. And then but Michael, that is, Michael has
you know,
to go it, wake it, him
that's
up.
Load management before load management.
Yeah.
Well, remember, they had to go get him.
Right.
From Vegas. Like, he didn't come back late. They had to go get him. He was already late.
Yeah, Michael flew to Vegas to get him. They brought him back.
You know, apparently there was even more that they didn't even get into of other stuff that happened. I can't even remember half of it right now. I just always remember going, how in the world are they doing this? But that is the brilliance of Phil Jackson, being able to, you know, number one, criticism, you know, because you had people like me, I'm sure, and I can't remember all the things I said, but that at that time, you could talk NBA in Nashville, right? This was before the Predators really took the ice. The Predators were, while this was going on, still an expansion team scouting the league. They were announcing what their name was and, you know, who their coach was. They didn't have any players yet or anything. So we were talking a lot of NBA. And you can imagine, you know, the soap opera that was. You could even get phone calls almost any time you wanted on that team. And I remember saying, how can you have Dennis Rodman on your team? How can you do that? That's not how I was taught a team works and stuff like that. But Phil Jackson kind of was able to think outside the box and understand how to manage all that. It seemed completely crazy at the time. It doesn't seem as crazy now, although it does. I mean, it was crazy, no matter how you slice it. But do you guys agree with that? Think back to that time.
Agree with what? What are you asking?
I mean, I used to think, why would you even have Dennis Rodman on your team? Was kind of my thing. It's not worth the circus. I know he's a great player, but how can you run a team with him doing his own thing like that? I just didn't understand that.
Because they had the – and they've said it.
They had the leaders.
I mean, they had the – look, why do the Patriots do certain moves that they have over the years? Because why? Because they trust the police in the room. Chicago had the police in the room. The head coach, Phil Jackson, was more than equipped to handle a guy like Dennis Rodman. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Grant and those guys could handle a guy like that. They knew the room could handle it. That's why, you know, there's times whenever we say, oh, because the Patriots, and look, the Chicago, I'm sure, had the same mentality. One, they got him at a bargain, right? And two, they had the same mentality. If it doesn't work, we'll move on. We'll get away. It's not like they were locked in for 10 years. It's not like they were forced to stay in that relationship. It was like, well, we'll try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, we move on.
But if they don't have him on those teams, they don't three-peat.
I agree. Dennis Rodman, I never question why. Mm-mm. Yeah. I got it. And here's the thing, and I think Jay Mariotti was really hinting at this, and we've never really had that guy in this market. You know, we've had, you know, we love Eddie George and Steve McNair and certainly Frank. You know, those guys, they were very, very popular. And here, you know, with Pekka and Shea Weber and Roman Josi, and those, we've had really popular athletes, but we've never had the mega, the global, right? The global star, right? We don't understand.
PK is probably the closest thing we've had to that.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, come on. PK and, to right. Michael Jordan. I mean, we're still talking Grand Canyon, right?
Sure.
And yes, I agree with you, but we're still talking Grand Canyon. Like, we've never had to cover or be around someone that is at just a worldly level, right? And what that's like and how they're treated, because that's how life works, right? Not everybody's treated equally, okay? Everybody's got different rules. I keep saying that all the time on the show. Like, stop living in fantasy land and act like everybody's got the same set of rules. They don't. That's not how it works in the real world. And the same is true in sports. And what it's like to cover – and just think about that team. Look, Willie, you brought up Will Perdue. We used to do weeklies with Will Perdue. And I brought this up, I think, a couple weeks ago. Will Perdue used to tell us, just think about this. He said when they traveled on the road, the Chicago Bulls, an NBA team, they were like the Rolling Stones showing up at their next destination. at the team hotel, at, you know, at the arena. They were like the Rolling Stones. Just think about that. They're in the opposition's town. Can you imagine what they're like in Chicago? If they're like that, if they're the traveling Rolling Stones, think about what they're like in Chicago. And I think that's what Jay's point was, is, look, there was a lot of stuff going on, but there was no way, and you know what, I was ever going to be able to report it. These are this is talking about Jay Mariotti, because they were, you just couldn't do that. They, you know, why would you go against what everybody is, what everybody, what is beloved and everybody talks about in that town, right? Like, you can't, why would you go against that? You would be insane. Like, look how much it did for the newspapers, talk radio, television. I mean, they were a ratings bonanza in that market and anywhere else. So we've never had that. We've never seen what that world is like. And you're right, PK is probably the closest. And like I said, that's still the Grand Canyon between PK Subban and the Chicago Bulls dynasty, or a guy like Michael Jordan.
We used to talk NBA in the off season. That's how big the Jordan, and it was only because of Jordan and because of the whole phenomenon of those teams and everybody trying to chase those teams. And of course, we didn't have, it was still before we were really a major league market. The Titans and Predators had not come in yet. But think about that. I mean, that's something we haven't done in a long, long time to any great degree, right? We've done it some with some of the mega stars who have changed addresses. Like, obviously, when LeBron has changed teams, that's been a big story. But we used to cover it, you know, more on a weekly basis, you know, who's going where. That's how big the NBA was, and that's how big the Bulls were back then.
Marquise, you got a question about Dennis Rodman.
Yeah, so when and watching this documentary and also watching the Rodman documentary, it seemed like Chuck Daly was kind of like the person that kept Dennis Rodman's head straight, and then all of a sudden he gets traded to the Spurs and he becomes Demolition Man. So I'm thinking, will we have gotten the off-the-court Dennis Rodman that we all know and remember if he stayed with the Pistons and stayed with Chuck Daly?
Fascinating question.
Probably not.
He was traded for Will Perdue. Remember, at the time, he was traded to the Bulls from the Spurs for Will Perdue. Will Perdue won a title with the Spurs. But it's a great question. I remember those days well, too, when he was with the Spurs and doing some of the crazy stuff. Because we had watched, I mean, I had watched Dennis Rodman on those great Pistons teams and then said, wait, where did this come from? Why is this happening? He took his shoes off, remember, and sat in the corner and just, you know, on the floor, defying the coach. And you're that's why I just couldn't understand. I've evolved on it now. I get it. It makes more sense. And the greatness that he had as a player was something. But, man, on a daily basis, that had to be. Can you imagine being the coach? That's how Phil Jackson had to really do psychology to get the best out of him. I don't know if anybody else could have done it at that point. I wonder what Chuck Daly would have done at that time. If Chuck Daly had come back to coach the Spurs or even the Bulls with Rodman, could he have corralled him the same way that he did? Because he just turned into a totally different person.
Well, the answer is, depends on what you're looking for. And you say, do you want that headache? Well, do you want to win? Do you want to have success?
You put up with some headaches.
Right. I mean, look, that's just the way, you know, put yourself in a general manager or a PD's position in radio. Okay, let's say you're on the other side, Willie. You're not pushing the on and off button, and you don't have a microphone in front of me. Instead, you're in management. Do you think anybody, you would ask the question about, you know, Howard Stern. Would you be willing to put up with that? Well, I would ask you, well, do you want monster ratings and you want monster revenue? Or do you want to just, you know, get somebody who's not going to give you a headache and not give you, you know, have you wanting to pull your hair out, I'm sure, on a weekly basis and be a giant thorn in your behind, you know, what it takes to, you know, and I'm, of course, going back to the, I don't know what, how, but I'm talking about going back to the day when he was coming up and blowing up. Can you imagine what he was like? I mean, well, we've seen Private Parts. I mean, can you imagine what that, well, but do you want, you know, do you want monster success or not? Or do you just want, you know, somebody who's not going to give you any trouble, but you don't have any of that revenue and you don't have any of those ratings? It's a matter of what you want. Same thing with this.
I could not have handled it. I couldn't have handled that. I would have had to have moved on to do something else.
Yeah. Right. It's each his own, right?
I wish you well. I understand why you're doing it. I just wouldn't have done it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Chuck Daly leave first? Because he left in 92. Did he leave first or did Rodman leave first?
Daly. Right? They said that's what really kind of when Dennis kind of started going off the reservation is when Daly was gone. I think that's why Marquise is asking the question. I do not believe.
Because
it
was really in San Antonio when he started with the hair, and that's when we really started seeing Dennis Rodman that we know.
Well, he also said in there that he has, you know, he meets Madonna, and Madonna's like, be yourself, man. Don't worry about what people – don't be who people want you to be. Be yourself. Be what works for you. And, you know, obviously, the more attention he got –
this is all Madonna's fault.
Well, I'm not saying it's Madonna's fault. I'm saying once he figured out – that, you know, he enjoyed that part of it. There was no turning back, right? He was always going to be that guy that received a ton of attention, whether it was good or bad. And I think it was very clear he enjoyed the attention. So the more he did it, the more attention he got, the more fed into, you know, his alter ego. Because I don't really feel like, because he's saying that, right? That's not really who he is. He's kind of an introvert, but there was that other side, so I just think he enjoyed that other side because it's not really comfortable, really, when you get down to it, to who he is, but he enjoyed it. And so that's why it just continued to grow and some would say grew way out of control and became the headache that we're talking about. All right, we'll come back. Titans first-round pick, Isaiah Wilson. He will join us to start the second hour of the program. That's next.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.